Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I wish I would be sleeping right now. It's again, a nice little all-nighter. But, you know, it is what it is when I try to find out what actually happened with the so-called Russian Freedom Legion. And current events are just keeping me totally tight. Back to the news it is. Oh, yeah, I'm getting married in less than a month also. Also is a bit strange and nerve-wracking, but, you know, I'm managing. Before we start, I'd just like to mention that if you ordered a map and didn't message us, or specifically Evit on Discord, then please do so, because we have a single map where someone asked for a map of North Vietnam, and I think of Colorado, and I got those maps, and they were pretty expensive. And now, you know, they just don't reply, and we don't know what to do with them, and we don't have the address, and it's a mess. So please, if you're that person, let us know. And if you want a Soviet military map of wherever you live, then also just let us know. We have a store that specializes in these nearby. At any rate, enough of the interviews and all that stuff. Time to get back to the news. Because all in all, the front is more or less stable-ish. Everything's just functioning, basically. Russians are just pushing onwards, yes, but it's nowhere near as horrible as people in the West seem to portray it. Oh yeah, Putin also speaks about nukes, but we'll get to that. I still don't understand why people take that seriously. I was very confused when I found out that apparently in last September, during the whole Kharkiv offensive where Ukraine retook a bunch of territory, the United States took it seriously and really prepared of what they would do if Putin would do a tactical nuclear strike or something. And that seems very naive to me. I mean, I don't know, do they have people in the White House who literally called up people in Russia and asked them, hey guys, are you planning on doing nuclear thing? And then actually believe them? It just seems so freakishly bizarre. I thought there are people who just, you know, analyze Putin's actions and maybe, you know, follow through with actually knowing what's up and knowing maybe their counterparts, but apparently sometimes no. I mean, if you haven't noticed, Putin always backs down when he's being pushed against. Always. Like, Prigozhin would have succeeded easily, but even then Putin just backed down himself, and then he, you know, goes through the back door and does the sneaky stuff, but Putin does not want to stand up when he's being confronted. And he would not, you know, do the nuclear option at all. If he would outright constantly deny that he would be doing nukes, then I'd understand. But, he's not. He's openly stating about and threatening and, you know, waving these nukes around, which means that he's not ready to use them and he will not use them. I mean, Russia is currently in the war using already everything that they have. There is nothing else to push through. They have to take away stuff from other regions. And yes, everything is of low quality and the morale is low, but there's a lot of stuff. So it is what it is. I mean, and Ukraine, with all the aid that's been, you know, hanging up in the air, the fact that they're still going on and working, that's amazing. Of course, I believe everyone should support them as much as we can. The biggest issue and the biggest threat to me recently, and sorry if you're a Trump voter, but I just kind of don't get you at this point, because Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, stated that he had spoken to Trump, and apparently Trump has a plan to stop the war, which basically involves cutting all aid to Ukraine and just allowing Ukraine to surrender and lose to Russia. And that would stop everything somehow and make things somehow better or something. I don't know. I hope that's a stupid exaggeration, because that seems to be a silly thing. But yeah, either it's sensationalism or something like that, but for unknown reasons, Putin gets overappreciated and all the situation gets massively overplayed. And it's not so bad. And I guess that's the problem here. When it isn't as loud and horrible when the war is just dragging again down in a positional war, and Ukraine would be doing much better, much better, if not for the case of 2022 when people all were super afraid of Russia's potential nuclear escalation. If Ukraine had been given everything they need, they would have won by now, definitely. Ukraine's issues is the fact that they don't have enough ammunition and the fact that they're just not getting enough when they need it. Weird. For example, Union reports that on the Avdiivka direction, the Ukrainians continue to just repel troops all the time. 91 combat clashes happened on March the 12th. And they risk their aviation, they do daring stuff, and they do drones, and they do amazing things and change how warfare works. Now, I wouldn't go as far as to tell that tanks are going to be totally useless, like a whole bunch of people in Russian media tend to do. But I'm saying that Ukraine is doing its best, given the limited materials that they have. And then I'm extra worried about what's going to happen next. But yeah, that's the thing. That's just a bit of a side note because, again, I hadn't spoken to you about the war for a while, only did these interviews. But let's get on to this, shall we? See, on March 12th, the so-called Legion of Freedom of Russia, RDK, and the Siberian Battalion entered the Kursk and Belgorod regions as part of a joint operation. Those are Russian Federation regions. This operation apparently has several purposes. It's not even over yet. And the first one is very social and political. This is another demonstration for Russians. There are really some oppositional movements to the Putin's regime and people who are ready to fight for that stuff, unlike, you know, modern Russian opposition who can't even agree on when are they going to go and protest against the so-called election. And it's totally weird. Because this was a mess, why I practically didn't really sleep. Because at one point, the Zed channels, you know, the propaganda guys, these guys entered once again. What happened and what did they wanted to do, I really didn't understand. Then, of course, all the Russian propaganda said that they had already been destroyed. Then there were videos about them kind of fleeing, but they weren't. And then turns out that they didn't flee and that there were fights still going on. And at this point, it's just a total mess. I have no clue even what's really going on. So far, we have only some comments from Mikhail Podolyak. He is an advisor to the head of the Office of President of Ukraine, and he shared his opinion on how this whole thing is happening about the raid. He commented that this will not disrupt the so-called elections because there are no elections, but this shows that people are trying to kind of show that they exist and get some sort of real actual opposition that is not this, as Ukrainians call it, so-called liberal one. Because this is kind of weird. See, these volunteers of the Freedom of Russia Legion, they've been fighting against the government forces. And apparently on day two, and I'm reading this now as it happens, said that the strategic goal of the mission is the march on Moscow. Well, Prigozhin tried, these guys are trying right now. At the same time, the volunteers admit that it will be difficult to achieve because you know, the task for the coming days is to make sure that there are no Putin elections in at least several regions of the Russian Federation. As Oleksiy Baranovsky, one of the fighters from the Freedom of Russia Legion, noted, the operation was deliberately timed to the so-called presidential elections in the Russian Federation, which are to be held from March 15th to 17th. I'll be checking on how these look in my own embassy, by the way, like in Latvia. Are they even going to do that? On March 14th, the Freedom of Russia Legion announced the beginning of the second phase of the liberation operation of the territory of Russia, during which, as they call, defensive actions will be carried out from the air, specifically against military facilities in Kursk and Belgorod. Volunteer Oleksiy noted that the citizens of Russia who are not indifferent decided to express their political will, their attitude to these elections, to the regime of Vladimir Putin, in this very specific way. So yeah, it is strange, and it is weird, and they're doing things during the election. And the propaganda is trying to calm down, and I can't call people, and it's like absolute bizarro world right now. Because, truth to be told, I can't really understand exactly what's happening, except, you know, people who are reporting what they're doing. But, well, the photos that we're seeing is that there are actual fights, and that these guys apparently had destroyed the enemy control post. But it's a mess. If I will find out something more concrete, I'll of course inform you. But, well, might be interesting with all the election stuff. Now, talking about which, this sort of should show you what's actually happening in Russia. Because the first part is Putin managed to announce that if he gets elected, he will get elected. He announced proudly that he's going to increase until 2030 the minimum salary of Russia to be 350 euros per month, which is nice. But at the same time, Putin delivered a message to Russian lawmakers stating that apparently they're going to raise taxes. And it's weird because, yep, I don't know what kind of a situation exists there in their economy when they have to announce tax increases before the election. But apparently, as I'm being told, they reached the yearly amount of budget deficits in 2 months. And they are now allocating one third of their whole national budget to finance the military and the war in Ukraine, which is triple the amount of 2021. This is just weird. They have, by the way, a 7.4% inflation as well, and lots of things are going very, very poorly. Under this Putin's plan, again, this is just before election, which just shows you how either everything is, well, bad in Russia, or how Putin doesn't care. The government would raise personal income tax from 15% to 20% for those earning over 5 million rubles, or roughly 55K USD, and from 13 to 15% for those making over 1 million rubles, roughly 11,000 USD. And those are annual numbers. Officials are also considering bumping up the corporate tax rate to 25% from the current 20%. So, yeah, they have to bump up taxes. And it's all just a weird mess. At the same time, like I said, Putin promised to boost living standards of Russians with big plans over the next 6 years. But obviously, knowing the budget, not going to happen. He just announced that he wants to give everyone massive birth rate benefits, like birth benefits and salary increases and everything, but all the money is going to the war. And no one's really cares. Meanwhile, and the funny Putin news, because, you know, we spoke about the front and everything, this one goes to my dear listeners in Belgium. Yeah. Belgium. I don't really speak about Belgium often. I'm very connected to people in the Netherlands, Been there once, haven't been to Belgium, but yeah. See you on March the 6th. Putin spoke at the World Festival of Youth in Sochi. And he responded to a question from a Belgian festival participant. And said the following, quote, Belgium appeared on the world map as an independent state largely thanks to Russia and Russia's position. But this no longer matters today. And, well, obviously, a number of major Belgian media outlets very quickly picked up and fact-checked this. And, Belgian media points out that Russian Emperor Nicky I saw the 1830-1831 Belgian Revolution, which led to the establishment of an independent kingdom of Belgium, as a threat to the European order, and intended to send the troops to help the Netherlands suppress the uprising. It's kind of weird. Nicky also kind of abandoned his intervention plans only after Russia, you know, got involved into the November uprising in Poland. So it's a bit weird. So Putin is increasing taxes, commenting on Belgium, not struggling at all with whatever is happening with the Liberation Legion, and life carries on somehow. Oh, but and of course we have to talk about Girkin and Mr. Kalashnikov, but that's in the ending part of the episode. Here I'd like to point all of you that yes, you can go and grab a coffee now, and that I was contacted in a bit of a mid-segment situation here. I was contacted by some people who wanted to support me, who offered some sponsorships, but I said no. If you ever think about doing anything through this site called BetterHelp, please don't, because these guys, they advertise everywhere. They try to get me in as well. And although I am not someone that, you know, is ashamed of going to therapy, I've had therapy in my life. BetterHelp literally has, you know, just posted user private data on Facebook and stole millions of personal information and just sold it to third parties. They don't care about your privacy, and they just will sell your data. And the guy who runs the whole thing apparently has zero psychological education. So please, if you are in trouble, and I can understand being in trouble in these times, which is why BetterHelp is like using all the podcasters ever to advertise among themselves, advertise to people, because these are tough times to get through, and people might be tempted to use them because they are comfortable or something. Please don't. And if you can, if you like, for example, like this online psychiatry thing, I don't know what to recommend you. Just if you need therapy, go get some. Just please don't fall for BetterHelp, because they will just sell your data. Just a PSA. I Googled them up, and I just thought that you guys might need to know the fact that if you hear someone really advertising for showing ads for BetterHelp. I hope I don't, on the Acast front at least. Again, I do not control what my random Acast plugs are in various other countries, but I hope it's not BetterHelp, because if it is, I will be sending some messages to them, because scammy businesses are not the thing that I want to be advertised on my show. But yeah, back to Girkin a bit. Just wanted to put this one in. After all, I've been working on this episode all night long, and remembered that I really wanted to tell you this. You see, you can't really lose your roots. And we were here way, way earlier before everyone else on the web found out about Igor Girkin. So here you go. This comes from his wife, and I quote here. Friends, there is new news from Igor in the pre-trial detention center. His wife posts that. Lawyer Molohov, together with other lawyers, visited him on March the 7th. He reports that Igor Ivanovich is cheerful and does not lose his spirit. I really would like to know how Girkin looks when cheerful, but whatever. Apparently, Igor does not sit idle. He writes analytics and also composes fables. For example, about the re-establishment of the Leningrad military district. However, according to his lawyer, he's very dissatisfied with the fact that he has not yet been granted a visit from his wife due to the fault of the court, and that his correspondence is strictly censored. It is a shame that because of specifically this censorship, we can't read Igor's analytical notes on the prospects of military and political situation in Transnistria or anything about the war, but, you know, at least we know now know why. He apparently, Girkin still, is following the latest events, and when asked about Navalny's death, he said that he considered it natural, as, quote, we are all not getting any younger, and prison does not add to our health. Lawyers report that Girkin is still eager to go to the front lines and has every reason to do so. Regarding the so-called Putin's elections, Girkin stated that he sees no sense for himself to participate in these elections and will not vote in them. And, yeah, more updates. Next week, apparently, the criminal case will be sent to the Court of Appeal to set a date for a court hearing. Apparently, well, there's obviously no hope for actual changes, but, you know, it's always fun to take a look at how these people are fighting against this Russian bureaucratic machinery. What I find the most interesting is that for some reason, somehow, they also consider that this Russia where Igor Girkin is sitting in prison and where's all this nonsense going on, that somehow is different from the Russia that they are fighting for. Which is just, I don't know, self-delusions are always a powerful thing. But yeah, Maxim Kalashnikov apparently had went to the front lines for a bit, and he, as usual, claiming that he's a futurologist, has now decided that it's hard to speak about the situation. He's decided that the Russia now needs to do a full response, just as the Yemen Houthis did, and that Russia would do awesome if they would just cut off the internet access to the West. Now, I sadly cannot message him, but yeah, if one of the most intelligent Zed patriots of all time are now trying to, you know, pretend that Russia should absolutely act like random terrorists, that really says something about everything. He released a new book, though, which I'm going to try and get, which is going to be a bit problematic, seeing that the book is in Russia and I'm in Latvia, and I have no idea if getting his book through some sort of legal means, because I want it in a paper form, would even be possible. But, you know, I'll deal with that after the wedding. Finally, I want to touch up on a segment that hadn't been here for a while now, I suppose. Again, because of all the interviews and all the madness with me getting married. It's your favorite, meanwhile, in Russia. And, you know, it's partially funny because, you know, in Russian Gosduma, the Duma deputy, one of the deputies, accused everyone who bought flowers for the 8th of March of financing Ukrainian army because the national flower that people in Russia give to their women in the International Women's Day are tulips. And apparently, you know, that's associated with Holland, and, you know, Netherlands give a lot of aid to Ukraine. So that was a mess. But that's not the main news. Not even the fact that apparently Russia's Central Statistics Office has announced that, quote, in the next 10 years in Russia, we might raise the age of young people to at least 38 years. That is, the Central Statistics Office wants to treat everyone who's at least you know, up to 38 as being considered youth. I mean, that's a federal program of true rejuvenation. I'd say don't be shy and roll everyone who's at least 97, but still. I wanted to look for some good news, but here's something for the usual sadness of the whole show. See, this is a thing. In Russia right now, you know that the prisoners are coming back, and we have a case where the person did a murder for the third time after returning twice and everything. And everything is just messed up there. But some things are so... I'm sorry for being too rude, maybe. I try not to be lately. But some things are too fucked up that I even have to react. In February of this year, Novosibirsk's Garin Mikhailovsky Library... That's a central library for kids in the town of Novosibirsk, posted about a recent recitation competition for school children called Dedicated to the Defenders of Fatherland. Among the judges evaluating the children's performance of patriotic poems was Nikita Semyanov, a veteran of the war in Ukraine. The post refers to him as a special military operation participant and a reconnaissance group commander. Shortly after, Semyonov visited the local school, spoke with the children there. Heroes of Russia, Novosibirsk, the local chapter of Russia's Association of Heroes, published photos from the meeting on social media. You probably know where this is going, but still. Next day, Semyonov's ex-wife, Polina, wrote a post telling a bit more about who this guy is, while being in shock herself. See, Nikita Semyonov strangled his father-in-law in April 2021 after the two got into argument. This Alexander Makarenko was apparently listed as missing for over a month. His body was found in May, and police quickly closed in on Semyonov and arrested him. Semyonov confessed to the murder, saying that they both had started arguing while working together in the garage. As Makarenko was leaving, Semyonov grabbed him by the neck, put a plastic bag over his head, and strangled him with a wire. He then loaded the body into a car, took it into the plot of land he owned, and buried it into a pit. In May 2022, court found this guy, Semyonov, guilty of murder and sentenced him to 9 years in a strict regime prison colony. However, of course, you know, he volunteered, and after he was wounded, he returned to Novosibirsk as a free man. And the problem is that that's not the only thing. His acquaintance, Ulyana, apparently also tied to his wife, published a thread recently where she posted things about, angry things about him even more, which kind of stunned me if those things are true, and I tend to believe her. Now this animal is going around schools and blowing up smoke up your children's arses, she wrote. Apparently, Semyonov used to teach guitar to teenagers, and he had also coerced some of his students, girls aged 12 to 15, into having sex with him. Semyonov's ex-wife, Polina, who posted about the fact how, you know, he had murdered her father, right? Was also 7 years his junior. And that's okay. I mean, we have a 6-year difference with my wife. However, I met Evita when she's 26 and I'm 34. Meanwhile, apparently Polina met this guy, Nikita Semyonov, when she was 10. He had worked at the school where Polina studied. Quote, "We slept together when I was 13 and I moved in with him at 15. I gave birth at 17 and when I was 18, we divorced." Ulyana said Semyonov tried to coerce her into having sex with him when she was around 14 and that again about a year later. I won't go into the details and everything, but he did apparently a bunch of bunch of bad things. And, you know, the story of his wife just corroborates this. Polina also told journalists that while she was living with him, he was, of course, very violent, sexually assaulted her, beat her, and all that nonsense. And she ran away from him. Note to everyone, though, Polina herself went to prison on drug possession charges, but it's all a complete mess. That's the problem here. Also, journalists were unable to get in touch with Nikita himself. He told Novosibirsk journalists that he wasn't going to comment on the situation and that he didn't recommend publishing anything on him. He blamed his ex-wife Polina for allegedly abandoning a 5-month-old child and disappearing for 10 years. His representative there told local journalists that he's working in patriotic organizations and therefore, from a moral standpoint, everything is fine. And that's just one of the stories out there. This new patriotic thing. Putin is now trying to portray everything in a weird light, and this is the new norm. This is just something that is going to be even more and more normal out there. And I'm worried about, you know, the people of Russia and everyday people who are going to have to live through this. When everyone comes back home, the 90s are going to seem like an island of peace anyway. By this point, I mean, if Russia wins, because, you know, everyone's been asking me what's going to happen if aid falls out and what's going to happen to Russia. Well, here's some evidence for you. Russia's already lost, basically. Even if they somehow manage to, I don't know, take over territory, murder a lot of civilians and do insane amount of war crimes, what are they getting? The messed up economy? Criminals are turning back home? Total chaos? Gang violence? Increased amount of murders? Inflation? And just, you know, probably the lowest quality of life in the whole European continent. I don't really see how, in any rate, this could function and work out for Russia. Especially since Putin is just going to fight until, you know, if he can't win the war, he's going to fight until he himself passes away or something. I don't know. There's not going to be any nukes. There's not going to be any stopping. There's only one way to stop Putin, and that's to make him back down. And truth to be told, the job of the rest of the world would be a lot more easier if there would be more people like this, like these volunteers that now raid Kursk and Belgorod, but I'm going to have to triple check on that because that part, oh boy, you think this is long? I had cut out about an hour of various rumblings and comments which changed through the day about these guys. War has taken on a strange front here. Had a lot of politics recently on the show. Didn't want to. It was kind of weird to get back on this whole war front, but it's all connected and all tied. I just hope that we can do our best to help Ukraine win, because I feel that Ukraine is just fighting for the safety of all of Europe more and more every passing day. And all that I can do is just do my best to support them. But yeah, that's it for today. Sorry for the long, rambly thing. It's just that after 3 interview episodes and me getting smacked by an electric scooter, really, my eye was closed, then shipping off all the maps and then preparing to get, you know, married in a month. There was a lot to say, and most of it really didn't come out the way I wanted to because of all the messy script, but we're back on the right track. So thank you for listening. It's gonna get better. It always does. Today I have to do a lot of calls and do a lot of bureaucracy. But yeah, if you like the show and you want to support it, please consider becoming our patron on patreon.com/theeasternborder. If you are a patron already, well, thank you. We appreciate it very much. And if you don't like Patreon, we're also on Ko-fi, or you could just go to theeasternborder.lv and like click the donate button there. Or, you know, just send us an email. If you want to help me somehow, let me know. Because I know that after the war, I'm definitely going to try to get a PhD, proper PhD somewhere in a foreign university. But yeah, that's it for today. До свидания, товарищ. And remember, happiness is mandatory. And life's just getting weirder every minute.